Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have John Dougal on the right.
Hey there. I'd like to say it's nice to be back, but it's kind of a somber week.
Tis so. And on the political left, Shireen Gorbani.
And hello and hey to our listeners who somehow are managing to stick with us through a time when I think a lot of people would just like to step fully away.
Oh, my goodness. What a week.
Yeah.
Plus,
and we talked about this last week, this event and, you know, these events that were going to take place. None of us imagined what would happen. We thought there'd be some protests and some people upset about it.
Yeah.
Not the tragic event that happened.
I was in Washington, D.C. with a group of business leaders as Senator Lee was speaking to us, and my Apple Watch had the news alert, you know, Charlie Kirk shot at a UVU event. And I was just like, no, it's just unbelievable. You had to like, and eventually you saw everyone in the room was seeing it and pointing it out to people. And Senator Lee's up there without a clue, you know, knowing because he's speaking. But where were you, Shireen?
I was at work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Started to see, I think I actually opened Instagram and saw, you know.
Of course.
Things I don't want to see.
Yeah, of course, because the algorithm will put it right at the top. Well, I don't know where to start with this, but let's not talk about all the details and events, but just like what led up to this? How's it being used? What's going to happen next? And Shireen, I know you've got thoughts on what led to this.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that we have lots of ways that people are radicalized into violence in this country and, I mean, beyond, right? This isn't a unique problem to the United States. What's unique about us is the incredible ease with which individuals can get guns, the culture of guns that we have, the, you know, I have to say, watching this go down, just the shot that was taken, like that kind of training outside of the military doesn't happen in a lot of other countries.
You've got distance, you've got wind, you've got all of the, you know, care that goes into planning something like that.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
A 22-year-old in southern Utah.
Yeah. 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 And I do think it's important to stop just for a second and say, as honestly little as I really thought about Charlie Kirk, and I fundamentally believe his words and history will determine, you know, his legacy. It is horrific to see anyone gunned down for what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we fundamentally all categorically agree that this kind of violence is not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think more and more it is who we are.
John, does it make you want to stop doing politics? Do you get that discouraged?
No, I tell folks I'm the eternal optimist. So
okay.
you always feel like you can make things better. You know, we joke, I'm the oldest of 11 kids. So, you know, your problem is find a problem, fix the problem. You know, you don't just walk away and leave it to somebody else to deal with. But it's difficult to look at this because, you know, this is where I'm probably a little bit like the governor. This is the thing that happens somewhere else.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen in Utah,
mm-hmm.
and it definitely doesn't happen 10 miles from my house.
Yeah.
And so you're just looking, you just wonder what's going on. And you know, I've gotten death threats, you know, in my political career and so forth. But it's, you know, okay, that's out there, something that just is so front and center. And it's like, what is so broken that even if, you know, I'll pick Shireen. Even if Shireen says something so egregiously outrageous, okay, I'm still going to talk with her. I'm still going to work with her. The worst thing is I'm going to walk away. You know, there's no sense of there's going to be any kind of violence in any kind of discussion that we're going to have. We're going to have our disagreements. Maybe we'll be outspoken with each other about our disagreements and why I'm wrong or I disagree with her. But it's one of those things in politics. I've just watched it over the last two decades as I've been very closely involved with it. Just seeing this inability for people to work through disagreements.
Yeah.
And I hear this concern about cancel culture, and I believe I've seen it. But I've seen it on both sides of the aisle, if you will. And groups pointing to the other side. It's their fault, without looking in the mirror saying, okay, what is my fault in this interaction?
Yeah. Well, you know, they use the term that, you know, this kind of thing happens because of contempt. And a lot of the social theorists will say that, you know, there's hate and there's anger. But when you combine those emotions, you get contempt. And contempt is the opposite of dignity. So everybody has inherent worth as a human being. This is my belief. I think it's most people's belief. And the opposite of that is when you feel contempt for someone.
Yeah.
And contempt leads to violence.
And we have modern politics that traffics in contempt.
Yeah, for sure. And so it begs the question.
Just you're wrong. You're the enemy.
Yes.
You're the enemy. That's what comes through over and over again.
I said, what led up to this? And it's like, well, social media contributes. The algorithms contribute. Do you guys go so far as to say all of us contribute to the degree that we enable contempt? I'm interested in your thoughts there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would say that I'm trying really actively to maintain a different space personally, but I think this is probably indicative, reflective of my politics versus yours, is for me, this is a collective problem. Mm-hmm. This is not an individual problem. I think it's part of why I was disappointed in the comments of our governor, who sort of indicated, well, each of us gets to choose. I actually think this moment calls for a leadership that's bolder than that.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about individual action anymore. I mean, it is when we come down to mm-hmm. a sole shooter, an individual. But when we think about the environment that we're sitting in, it's a collective issue with collective policies and strategies that we need collective action on.
Yeah. John, what say you?
I think I largely agree with Shireen.
There's a context that this is happening.
The shooter is responsible for the shooter's action.
Uh-huh.
But I think over years we have created, I'm going to call it a cesspool
mm-hmm.
Of the world of politics.
Good word.
You know, and that feeds different people in different ways. And you mix in how social media, and you can go to the outer reaches of darkness in that and end up in a place that I just shake my head and go, how do people get there?
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Governor Cox. Wow. You know, you go to bed one night and you wake up and then this is in your lap. And then it just fills all your time and you are on the international stage and everybody's watching and it's complex and you're trying to get it right. How do you all think he did? I mean, I'm happy to go first and just say that I thought his tone was pitch perfect. I really appreciated what our governor did. Now, I was seeing it from Washington. I was watching, you know, as he did all the things that he did. And I thought that his year promoting Disagree Better as the chair of the National Governors Association helped give him the right words and frame of mind to be able to rise to the moment. Shireen, what do you think?
Different take.
Okay.
I will say I feel like the politic of this moment mm-hmm. has moved so extreme that what we saw from our governor, we accepted as outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it was kind of the floor, not the ceiling.
Interesting. What would you have wanted differently?
Because he talked
about getting an off ramp. He talked about not escalating this. He said we ought to take a minute and think about who we are and where we want to be. I mean, he was all these reflective things that we needed a leader to say. And at the same time, we had all these other leaders saying that Democrats are murderers and, you know, leftists. And
he did go on the Sunday shows and then say that this is, you know, leftist ideology as well. Like he.
And was that wrong?
Was that factually inaccurate? I don't know. We're just not sure yet.
There's some that say it's leftist. There's some that say it's so far right it wraps around to become left, but we don't fully know.
So I think for me, maybe
extreme.
I would say it's
clearly shooting somebody like extreme. This is extreme, no matter how you slice it.
But it's a little bit for me, deja vu, because this is the same governor who got up and I talk about the speech he gave after the Pulse nightclub shooting all the time, and then continues to sign laws that are really hurtful and say very little about them, you know, that are harming communities that I love and care about. I just continue to see actions that undermine the words that I hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to continue to give him chances, I guess. But I was really troubled by the thing about, you know, praying that it was somebody from somewhere else, because to me, I thought, that's me. Mm-hmm. I'm not from here. I'm mm-hmm. brown. I'm the daughter of an immigrant. Like, I just was really...
I'm going to take exception.
I was troubled by that.
But I don't believe he was saying anything about immigrants. I know people spun it that. I think he was only saying somebody outside of Utah, because he wanted to think that in Utah, it was different. We were different.
We aren't.
And we're not, as yeah. we unfortunately yeah.
and,
learned
and, you
there.
Know, I didn't love that part of his commentary, but I will tell you that I think it was authentic because I was harboring some of the same thoughts that I'm like, I hope this was someone from the outside because surely this didn't come from my home state.
Right.
And so it's just this natural feeling, Shireen, that isn't – if I were, you know, like the spokesperson trying to help with the prep, I would say, let's not do that one.
Yeah.
But it also is an expression of his authenticity that he said what he was feeling.
Sure. And as someone on the other side of that, it reinforced the exact thing he was calling us not to do.
Yeah. I think the calling for the death penalty so early did the same thing, right?
Thing.
You're saying things, we don't want violence, and then, you know, that's pretty violent.
Yeah.
But I will say that – put yourself in this man's shoes, you know, the weight that's put on his shoulder and the bright spotlight. And I think he got most things right.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you as well. I mean, this would be very challenging, I think, for anybody thrown in this kind of situation, no experience with this. And now you got to respond. You know, the auditor part of me says, okay, he spouted off with some things in the first day that it's okay. You're making statements before we even know anything about the shooter, mm-hmm. the facts, anything like that. So to me as an auditor, I take this complaint with the FBI and others. It's like, okay, let's talk about the facts that we have. Let's not speculate about what we don't know yet. Let's dot the I's and cross the T's and get that all put together. I think it was on Friday. I think he did a much better job.
Because he was able to be more scripted.
He had more time to digest this. They had now captured the suspect and that
well,
was
the suspect.
But they had their person.
They had their person.
Yeah.
And so I think he had a chance to reflect and to share a deeper, broader meaning in that message.
Yeah.
And I thought he did quite well in that. Yeah, I can nitpick a few things here and there, but I thought generally, throw any of us in there, I thought he did a good job.
Let's take a short break, and then I have just a couple more questions, and we'll
Sounds
move
good.
On to something else. Does that sound okay?
Yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We're talking about the tragic assassination of Charlie Kirk and just thinking through some of the details. What do you guys, there's something about the fact that this is happening on both sides of the aisle. And it's interesting how
this
political
violence.
Yeah, political violence. And some people find it really convenient to not see that, in my opinion. I made a little list here. Pelosi's husband. You guys can put
Paul Pelosi.
RDs behind these. Minnesota legislators. Trump had a couple of serious attempts. Obviously, Charlie Kirk.
Let's throw in there. Okay. Paul Pelosi was injured in Minnesota. There was a former Speaker of the House and her husband that were killed.
In their homes.
In their homes in the middle of the night and others that were injured. Trump was injured.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then the Charlie Kirk, Gabby Giffords.
Yeah.
Going back a ways. Steve Scalise.
Yep.
Gretchen Whitmer.
Yeah.
January 6th.
Yeah.
Because of the threats to Mike Pence, and then Josh Shapiro.
Yes.
Those are just
an
easy list. But this is extremism, no matter which side of the pole you're on. It's people
that and sometimes the actors aren't even of one political affiliation or another. They're just disturbed individuals.
Yeah. Tough. Shireen, I want to ask who inspired you after a tough, you know, few days. But is there anything else you want to say on the Charlie Kirk
tragedy? Well, I mean,
tragedy?
There are a couple things I'd like to add. I was interested to find a person named Barbara Walter, not Walters, who's written a book, I think from 22, called How Civil Wars Start and How to Stop Them. You know, that they're far more likely under four key conditions. Democracy is declining rapidly. Societies are divided by race, religion, class. Political leaders tolerate or encourage violence, and citizens have easy access to guns. And
so we check shocking list
all of those boxes.
Yeah.
And
we we check them nationally and we check them locally.
Yeah, we do.
You know, that's the real thing we have to remember, I think, after all of this, because this is Utah's the focus of this. It was so, you know, odd to me to be in D.C. and hear that the head of the FBI headed to Utah, the vice president headed to Utah, you know, and then in every hotel lobby where there's a flat screen, there's our governor.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's here.
It's here. And she does offer some prescriptions. And one she says is, you know, there's a lever that we could pull immediately, and that would be to de-emphasize or require social media platforms to lower the engagement on the most outrageous speech, right? And I know that we're having lots of conversations about free speech and who gets it in this country anymore, but the actual algorithm is built by, the machine is built by our social media, you know, overlords fundamentally make money off mm-hmm. of outrage, and they could suppress that. Mm-hmm. They could tone that down so that the algorithm's not kicking up the most outlandish
thing. She goes to social media as like her first and big lever.
Yeah. It's something you could do now. So anyway, I'm interested to spend more time with her.
I would say it's something that the social media companies could choose to do, government can't do it. The government will get itself in trouble if it tries to do that kind of
restriction. We're trying all sorts of other things here, but, you know, not that. So fine with the outrage.
You just mean in terms of limiting rights.
Free speech. Yeah. You got to be very careful when it comes to, you know, it's got to be narrowly tailored, and there's got to be a compelling government purpose. So.
Well, yeah, our state seems happy to wade into those debates, so that would be a place where we could see some collective leadership. I'll say for inspiration, or a place where I found some context, was going back to 1968 and the remarks of Bobby Kennedy after the assassination.
It was still 20 years till you were born.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, just put, because I was alive for this, but I was too young to remember it. But
sure. So this
you and me both.
Speech is often referred to as the mindless menace of violence speech. And he does go on to say, you know, too often we honor swagger and bluster and the wielders of force. Too often we excuse those who are willing to build their own lives on the shattered dreams of others. Goes on to say, some look for scapegoats, other look for conspiracies, but this is much clearer. Violence breeds violence, repression brings retaliation, and only a cleaning of our whole society can remove this sickness from our soul. And to know that we've been here before makes me feel in some ways worried that maybe we won't be able to be here again. But I also am hopeful that there's an opportunity for change.
Yeah. John, who inspired you at the end of this?
I'm going to point to my friend, Dr. Greg Jackson. He's a UVU professor. Mm-hmm. He was working from home that day, and he has a podcast called History That Doesn't Suck.
Okay.
And he talks a lot about what we're seeing today is, I mean, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it rhymes. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of stuff we're going through today. Mm-hmm. That, as Shireen pointed out, in 1968, but in times even earlier, you know, mm-hmm. His podcast starts essentially at the Revolutionary War and the founding and rolls forward, and we're about World War II, but you just think about that. And so he had to post to his community, or needed to post, I think, to his community to just let him know, one, I'm okay, two, mm-hmm. thank you for reaching out, you know, because mm-hmm. he teaches at UVU, mm-hmm. and then just a message to them about wrestling and grappling with this and what we need to do
nice.
As society.
Yeah, so from a history professor. I'm going to go with our governor, Governor Cox. And again, this is me in Washington turning on CNN to see what was going to be said at this press conference. I'll read what I thought was particularly inspiring because it rang true to me. He said, "But I want you to look at how Utahns reacted the last two nights. There was no rioting. There's no looting. There were no cars set on fire. There's no violence. There were vigils and prayers and people coming together to share the humanity. And that, ladies and gentlemen, I believe is the answer to this. We can return violence with violence. We can return hate with hate. And that's the problem with political violence. It metastasizes because we can always point the finger at the other side."
I do think doing this show weekly puts me in a different mental space than many of my friends on the left, or, you know, people who spend time maybe with folks who largely agree with them. I do think there's something that kind of grounds my sense of humanity about political difference, because we sit together week after week after week and have to wrestle with what's happening in this country. And I hope that people find some comfort in that. But what I would suggest is you might find even more benefit from starting a conversation with someone with whom you disagree.
Well said. And I will say, just paraphrasing, Arthur Brooks is someone who's had a lot of influence on me. He's an academic Impact Scholar at the University of Utah, and his home college is with the Gardner Institute. So I get to work with him every semester. And he once gave me an assignment. He said, when you find someone you disagree with, run to them. And he said, don't walk, don't wait for them to come to you, run to them. And then go listen, try to learn, keep an open mind, show respect. Anyway, it changed the way I approach people that I disagree with, because I take it as a learning moment. And then in the process, because you've shown respect, it becomes a learning moment for them.
Yeah.
And I know the gap, you know, the breach gets less.
Less. I know that it can be dangerous for folks, right? Like, depending on your identities or, you know, I'm not saying it's for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's not safe for everyone. But where you can find those moments to bridge, even in small ways.
Yeah. Hey, we've got 5 minutes left on the program.
Before you go.
Yeah.
I want to just, Arthur has a book called Love Your Enemies.
Yeah. Prescient. He was ahead of his time.
Oh, well ahead of his time. But it's one of those things you talked about, contempt. Absolutely. That's that cancer that eats at everything, whatever relationship it is. And I tell folks, I can learn from everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. It may be I learned that I don't want to do that, but I can learn from anybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Never an easy transition away from something that serious and difficult, but let's talk about a few other things in the news. John, I'll go to you first. The Supreme Court has rejected the legislature's bid to extend use of gerrymandered congressional maps.
Yes, the Utah Supreme Court, and unanimously they said...
They
said the argument didn't address what they were contesting. Mm-hmm. So they were taking issue with the timing, and there was the process and everything, and the court basically said your argument wasn't on point for what you were saying was an abuse of discretion.
We have a congressional election a year from November. And by, I think, November 11th, am I getting that about right? But our
November 10th is the drop dead.
Our chief election officer, our lieutenant governor, has said that we need new maps drawn by then.
Yeah. So the counties have time to get everything developed for January.
And then the candidates can declare their candidacy for the districts that they'll actually run in. This is fascinating. What do you predict happens, Shireen?
I think that we get a competitive district, if not maybe two.
Like
super competitive.
I'm not that optimistic.
I would say just with what's happened, I wouldn't be surprised if the legislature tries to, you know, split it as close as they can, which mm-hmm. may give two districts that are still Republican, but maybe a little closer. I don't know. I would just be interested to see what happens.
I'm not optimistic, but what I want to see districts. Well, I want to see districts that follow
the guidelines.
Yeah. And for me, it's like I want cities to stay intact.
Counties
as much as
possible.
That's just a simple one. Yeah. I get that, you know, you might have to, but I want communities of interest to stay together. And I'm not even thinking about R&D. I'm just thinking about my daughter lives a few blocks from her local library, and it's not in her congressional district. So whenever there's something posted at the library for so-and-so's coming to present, it's not hers. I'm like, how do they do that?
Yeah.
Libraries should be with the neighborhoods that they're with.
So it's really hard to do redistricting, especially for congressional seats when we're trying to do it plus or minus one voter. It is really hard.
I can imagine.
And so communities of interest mean different things.
I think you're going to have to cut up Salt Lake County.
Is it a city boundary?
I get that.
Is it a county boundary? Is it a school boundary? On and on. You know, they've got certain boundaries clearly on the maps, like cities and counties, but they don't necessarily have school boundaries or religious community boundaries, you know, congregations, whatever it might be. That's usually information that the redistricting folks don't have. It's a hard process. What do you think they're actually going to do? I know what you talked about.
Yeah.
You think?
Oh,
you
I think we're
hope
you know
for.
I think we're going to get legal districts, and my guess is that they will still very much lean Republican. And I'm okay with that. But I want, in that drawing, I want those boundaries to make logical sense.
But you would have better representatives, more engaged, more grounded in Utah if we had competitive districts.
Yeah, I don't mind competition, you know, for it. And I'll even say this. There's even a strategic reason why it's nice to have multiple parties in Washington, because whoever's in power, you have representation.
Right. I'm going to say there's the drawing of the maps, and then there's the setting of the rules of how the judge is supposed to interpret the maps. I will tell folks, watch for the legislature work on both of those tracks, because this is something the legislature can do that generally most folks can't do. Mm-hmm. They can set the rules at the same time they set the maps.
Yeah. got about 1 minute left in the program. Let's do something really quick here. Any other interesting news you're seeing out there? Like, I'm seeing Tina Cannon in another bit of a fight. She's our state auditor in a little bit of a fight again with the Senate about office space in the Capitol. I'm just like, figure that out, everyone. Figure that one out.
Yeah. Well, you know, desk positioning can be very political. I think for me, I'm concerned about what's happening at the federal level around contraception. I believe it's $10 million worth of contraception was destroyed by this administration. I think the rollbacks that are happening internationally around access to reproductive health care are really concerning. So those are some things that I'm paying close attention to.
John, something you want to end with?
I'm just going to note Wednesday is Constitution Day. So when you hear this, it'd probably be yesterday. I wrote a little op-ed. It got published in the Deseret News a couple days ago. It just talks about my concern about power. And we used to be skeptics of power. That's part of the reason checks and balances in the Constitution. And now we're just skeptics when power is held in the hands of our opponents. Mm. And so that's just one
you
of the things
a nice piece.
Thank you.
Until we meet again next week, everyone take care of yourself. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with John Dougal and Shereen Gorbani. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everyone.